The headlines, the International Atomic Energy Agency warns that Europe must take urgent action to avert a potentially dangerous natural gas shortage this winter. Iran says comments by U.S. President Joe Biden against Tehran during his recent visit to West Asia were a sales pitch to sham the apartheid regime. And thousands more people are evacuated from their homes in southwestern France as wildfires continue to rage in the region. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumisha Ahmadi, and these are our top stories of this hour. The International Energy Agency warns that it is calling for a crisis over the looming gas crunch in Europe caused by reduced Russian supplies. The head of the IEA has urged European nations to take coordinated action to avert a potentially dangerous fuel crisis in the coming winter. The agency says that the continent faces a real possibility that Russia might completely halt its supplies. The move could force some governments into gas rationing. Europe has historically relied on Russia for around 40% of its natural gas, most delivered via pipelines. Russia has already shut down some of its pipelines, including Nord Stream 1, citing different pretexts. According to the IEA data, gas flows to the EU have fallen below 100 million cubic meters a day this month. Europe says that Russia is using energy as a political leverage against Western sanctions, an accusation that Moscow denies. Welcome to this edition of the News Review. In this edition, Iran has made a blistering attack on U.S. President Joe Biden over his latest rhetoric against the country's nuclear program.
Irony of our times. Just on the anniversary of the first U.S. nuke test, and after visiting an outlaw regime that possesses clandestine nukes, Mr. Biden stresses that he would not allow Iran to build bombs. Sales pitch to charm the Israeli apartheid regime by bombs that Iran has never sought.
Iranian foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani was referring to Biden's remarks during his recent West Asia tour that included a visit to Israel. Biden said in a meeting with the acting Israeli prime minister in Tel Aviv that Washington would use force to stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. He later repeated his anti-Iran stance in Saudi Arabia on the second leg of his regional tour. Iran has time and again rejected allegations that it is in the pursuit of nuclear weapons. However, the Islamic Republic has made it clear that any act of aggression against the country will be met with a crushing response. To continue this discussion, we're joined by Robert Fantina, author and journalist, who is joining us from Ontario, and also Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator from London. Let's begin with Mr. Fantina. Basically, in your opinion, why did the U.S. president have to make such anti-Iran comments, particularly mentioning that the U.S. is prepared to use force?
He's doing this, as you mentioned, to charm or to please Israel for reasons due to Biden's particular as every president in recent history has also done. He wants to give Israel everything that it wants. If Israel doesn't want Iran to have nuclear weapons, then Biden will prevent it. It's all to shore up his, to show that he supports Israel completely. Why he does this, why he supports an apartheid regime in violation of guilty of crimes against humanity is another unknown, but that was his purpose for doing so. It's more than ironic that the leader of the only country that's ever used nuclear weapons thinks it can decide who can and cannot have.
That is true. Said Mohsen Abbas, Iran, as a sign of goodwill, signed the nuclear deal back in 2015. There have been numerous reports from the IAEA saying that Iran has been complying with that deal. The U.S. in 2018 left the deal, and now it is accusing Iran. What do you make of this show?
Well, the truth is that the hypocrisy and the double standards of the Americans is so obvious that it barely is worth repeating over and over again. The world generally knows what the Americans are about. It's about the economic interests. It's about, as my colleague said, the interests of Israel primarily. And don't forget, there's also the challenge that they face on the surface, on the face of it. There is this so-called Eurasian axis, which is rising. So Russia, China, Iran being included within that is something that the Americans will argue that it compels them to actually have a stronger hand in West Asia. In reality, Saudi Arabia has actually been making noises, very positive noises for Russian support, and has also been very open to China. It could be argued, therefore, that Biden's mission, other than Israel, was also to secure and lock down Saudi Arabia. You know, Donald Trump talked about milking the cow, and milking Saudi Arabia is certainly something the Americans have been awfully good at over the decades, and they want to continue that until that oil runs out completely. So you could say that also Biden has been forced to try and bring Saudi Arabia back into his fold, because the Saudis have got the jitters. The fact of the matter remains that in Yemen, the Americans, aside from supplying the weapons to kill all the poor Yemenis via the Saudi direct campaign against that nation, they've actually done very little in terms of boots on the ground. And that's what Saudi Arabia is probably looking at, is to say that, you know, are we really secure? Can American defense systems really save us? Because the rise of drone technology, the rise of ballistic missiles in the region is all challenging them. And partly the Americans have also been bolstering up, in terms of nuclear hypocrisy, the possibility of the Saudis having their own nuclear weapons. It won't actually happen. If it did, it would be triggers in the hands of the Americans or the Israelis ultimately. But what they're doing is they're also trying to keep Saudi and the Gulf Arab states in line. And by trying to sort of pay lip service to the fact that they can put Iran under pressure with a military attack. It's highly irresponsible. It's really beggars belief that the Americans can use this kind of language, knowing full well the Islamic Republic of Iran has an arsenal of hundreds of thousands of its own ballistic missiles and can give as good as it gets, given that they failed in Syria, given that they failed in Lebanon, given that they failed in Yemen. How on earth do the Americans expect militarily to be able to bring the Islamic Republic of Iran under any kind of control, let alone Israel?
And as you mentioned, Iranophobia is now the main tool at the hands of the U.S. Mr. Fontina, if you could please shed more light on this whole Iranophobia project that the U.S. is pursuing and how it economically benefits from it.
Certainly. The U.S. is twisting the narrative. Now, U.S. news reports are talking about what can be done to bring Iran back into compliance to the JCPOA. No one's talking about what can be done to bring the United States back into compliance, and it's the United States that left initially. The United States wants oil. That's one of the reasons why Biden visited Saudi Arabia and was so cordial to leaders there, despite their atrocious human rights records. Despite their assassination of Jamal Khashoggi a few years ago, the U.S. wants their oil. The U.S. would also like to have Iranian oil, too, but isn't going to buy it from the current government because it sees the Iranian government as the evil one, the enemy, and since Israel sees it that way, the United States will continue to do so. So if there is an invasion of Iran by the United States or Israel, which would be a disaster, as your other commentator mentioned. Iran is not a small, weak country with no allies. It would be a total disaster. But if the U.S. does invade, it wouldn't be to prevent Iran from interested in. It would be to get its oil. I do want to comment that while the Iranian government has said it has no interest in nuclear weapons, the fact that it's being threatened by two countries with major nuclear weapons may make the government reconsider that and feel they have a need to have nuclear weapons. So it could be that Israel and the U.S. are driving them to that and will then say, oh, look, Iran has nuclear weapons, we have to invade. So either way, it's the United States attempting to manipulate the situation for its own benefit, for power and profits and oil, which is what has always been important to the U.S. government.
Exactly, and as you mentioned, milking the cow. So, Mr. Abbas, if you could please tell us, how can the Arab nations and Arab leaders, for that matter, trust a person who doesn't even put enough effort to learn an Arab name? He couldn't even pronounce Shirin Abu Akleh's name correctly, or any other issues that the Arab world is now concerned about. How can they even trust the U.S.?
Well, because basically the whole of the infrastructure of these Gulf Arab nations is ultimately controlled by Western deep state, whether it's Israeli deep state or whether it's the Atlantic deep state nations. They're embedded so deeply inside the countries like Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. I mean, you'd have to be very naive not to think that actually the key area of energy interest for the West would be left alone to deal with its own affairs. People like Mr. MBS, you know, Mohammed bin Salman, yes, they're the puppets that get put up front and they get bolstered up, but the reality is their strings are pulled by these agencies in the background. There's been rumors that the CIA has fallen out with MBS, and there are other rumors to say Saudis are trying to shift over towards the Chinese and the Russians. In reality, these are all, I think, just part of a window dressing. The truth is that the Zaire Western imperialists have had their talons inside these nations for a very long time, and they don't really have a great deal of say of how their policies are run. Look, Saudi Arabia invests something like $4 trillion in real estate in America alone. The Swiss bank accounts of these royal families are all held to ransom by Western banksters. The Saudis and these guys are essentially just puppets on strings, and they don't make the decisions, although they do go about doing what they're told to do. For instance, you know, Sisi has been running around, Egypt's leader has been running around trying to rally Bahrain and Oman, and others also are running around trying to rally this kind of Arab-style NATO defense thing against Iran. What they're better off doing is allying with the Islamic Republic of Iran, creating a stronger regional alliance, which actually puts Israel and America in check, because they're the illegitimate protagonists and oppressors in the region. It's not Iran.
Thank you very much. Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator from London, and Mr. Robert Fantina, author and journalist from Ontario. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of the News Review. And thanks to all of you viewers for following us. Moving on, as Iran prepares to host a meeting on Syria as part of the Astana peace process, the Iranian foreign minister has laid out the agenda of the talks. That includes the return of Syrian refugees and the restoration of peace, security, and stability to the war-torn Arab country. Hossein Ahmed Abdullahian says the meeting will reaffirm the main objective of the Astana format, namely reducing tensions in conflict zones in Syria. As such, he says, the talks seek to resolve through a diplomatic means the recent security tensions between Turkey and Syria. The Atlanta talks, the Astana talks, that is, on Syria, were launched in 2017 at the initiative of Iran, Russia, and Turkey. The presidents of the three guarantor states will hold their seventh summit in Tehran on Tuesday. Reports say that the Syrian foreign minister, Faisal Miqdad, is also due to arrive in Iran on the same day. And Shia Muslims in Iran and other countries are celebrating Eid al-Qadir, which is one of the main festivities on the Islamic calendar. That is the anniversary of the day Prophet Muhammad named his cousin and son-in-law, Ali ibn Abi Talib, as his successor and head of the Muslim community. Imam Ali, the first Shia imam, was named by the Prophet at a location outside Mecca called Qadir Qom. The occasion is marked every year at the end of the Hajj season. And parts of Europe remain on high alert amid rising temperatures that are expected to hit all-time highs. As a heat wave moves north from continental Europe, the UK braces for its hottest day ever. The country could see temperatures near 40 degrees Celsius for the first time. That has affected all aspects of public life. Train services are suffering disruptions while schools and doctors' offices are closing and governments are urging people to work from home. The heat wave is also accompanied by wildfire crisis in France. Firefighters are battling two gigantic blazes in the southwest, prompting the evacuation of another 5,000 people. Extreme heat has already been tormenting southern European countries like Spain and Portugal. Students have shown that climate change is making heat waves hotter, more frequent, and longer lasting. Our correspondent Chris Den Hund gives us more details on the measures taken by Western countries against the wildfire and heat wave in parts of Europe.
Experts, they said already that in the southwest of France, there is a drought since months, and there is already now a lack of water and a lack of quality and quantity of water. And there is also more serious critics coming from ecologic associations and opposition groups in the French parliament. They say that this kind of heat wave does not have natural causes, but it's due to the human way of exploiting energy resources. So they are saying to the French authorities that France should stop taking half or zero measures against the global warming, and they are calling for a fast transition from the use of energy sources based on petrol and gas towards energy resources based on renewable energy, mm-hmm. Especially solar energy and wind energy. Germany is taking important measures to make a transition to renewable energy. France is not very fast. Of course, it's better than the USA, who is totally, the political decision makers in the USA are totally linked to important big petrol companies. But also France, the political decision makers are linked to, for instance, Total Energy, who has an important influence in what they call the France-Afrique. So these kind of big petrol companies who are, I don't say they are controlling the French government, but they have an important influence on French authorities. They are not willing to make a fast transition to renewable energies.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
According to Iran's Secretary of High Council for Human Rights, Kazem Gharibabadi, Sweden has committed an act of disgrace in the history of human rights by unjustly sentencing an innocent Iranian citizen. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Kayhan, International Staff Writer. This article is published under the heading Sweden's injustice against Iranian citizen could prove costly. Here's the story. The regime in Sweden has committed a gross violation of human rights and breached international law by holding a mock trial and sentencing Iranian citizen Hamid Nouri to life imprisonment after illegally imprisoning him for the past 33 months. His illegal arrest was based on the baseless allegations leveled against him by the MKO terrorists, who are called munafiqin or hypocrites by the Iranian public for their treason against the country for siding with Saddam during his war against the Islamic Republic of Iran and committing of numerous crimes against humanity. The Iranian people cannot forgive the unpardonable acts of terrorism of these fugitives from justice who have a bloody record of planting bombs in public places, assassinating Iranian officials and torturing and killing ordinary civilians to the tune of 17,000 during their stay in Iraq under protection of the now overthrown Ba'athist minority regime. They even committed crimes against the people of Iraq on the orders of their masters in the West by violating the sanctity of the holy shrines in Karbala and Najaf, and indiscriminately killing the masses who rose against Saddam in 1991 uprising. Now, by licking the boots of the US and the illegal Zionist entity, these godless traitors label all sorts of wild accusations against Iranian citizens. For their part, certain regimes in the West, which are avowed enemies of the Islamic Republic, despite their claims to respect human rights, feel no inhibitions in not just providing asylum to these fugitives from justice, but violate international laws by subjecting Iranian citizens to imprisonment on absurd charges to please these terrorists. According to Iran's Secretary of High Council for Human Rights, Kazem Gharibabadi, Sweden has committed an act of disgrace in the history of human rights by unjustly sentencing an innocent Iranian citizen. Hamid Nouri is not a Swedish citizen, neither does he live in Sweden, nor has he committed any crime in the country, which he was visiting on a tourist visa. Then on what basis the Swedish regime imprisoned Nouri and passed a sentence against him on wild charges brought up in a kangaroo court that has clearly violated the principles of sovereignty and independence of governments as per international law? Iran now reserves the full right to implement its laws on any Swedish citizen visiting the Islamic Republic on any type of visa. Tehran cannot be indifferent to nationals of hostile countries who could be spies under guise of businessmen or tourists. And if they're not spies, they might be having records of public offenses in their own country. In other words, while living and growing up in Sweden, they might have been embroiled in public brawls, bouts of drinking, embezzlement, fornication, theft, blasphemous comments against religion, and the like. Iran has its own humanitarian laws for trying such criminals and has every right to probe the past of any Swedish national apprehended by the Iranian security forces and to subject him or her to the punishment specified for such crimes. So, Stockholm should not shed crocodile tears if any of its officials whose crimes of their past are confirmed by the Iranian judiciary are subjected to prison terms. Whiplashes, amputation of fingers, and capital punishment if it is required.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Today we listen to the speech of Hujjatul Islam Salim Yusuf Ali.
Respected elders, brothers, sisters, we've gathered here for the most special of occasions of the entire year. It is the day of the night and the day of Ghadir. On this occasion, I want to congratulate all of you, all the believers, and of course the Imam of the time, Ajallahu Farjahu Sharif. Just to give us an idea of the greatness of this occasion, I want to first narrate a historical incident that took place that I'm sure all of you have heard of before. There was one time where one member of the Jewish community came to Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, and he says that there, I have been reading your book, the Quran, and there is a verse in the book that I have come across. And that verse is the one which says, Al-Yawma akmaltu lakum dinakum wa atmamtu alaykum ni'amati wa raditu lakum al-Islam adina. That this is the day in which I have perfected for you your religion, and I have completed my blessing upon you, and I am pleased with Islam being your religion. And that man says that had that verse been descended and had it been revealed for our community, we would have most definitely taken that day as an Eid, a day of festival and celebration. And that is the perspective of somebody who is from outside of the religion. Just through a very, you know, far remote perspective, when he's reading the book, he finds this verse and he says that there's something special that took place on this day. When we go to the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, one of the brother kindly mentioned one of those traditions which gives us an idea when it is being referred to as Al-Eid al-Akbar, Eidullah al-Akbar, the greatest of the festivities, the greatest of the days. I'll relate another tradition in which the eighth Imam, Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam, compares the different a'yad. He says, he wants to give us an idea of how great this day actually is. You know, these days they have these special places where you go to if you want to gaze upon the stars. They're called like dark sky preserves or dark sky areas. And the reason why you have to go there is because there's so much light pollution due to city street lights that we've forgotten even how beautiful the night sky actually is. They even have some special cities where they have ordinances in place where they have to shut off the street lights at a certain point, or they make the lights motion sensor based. Why? Because they want people to appreciate the dark sky so they can see the beauty of the stars. But when you want to go stargazing, what they tell you is that you should make sure that you look at what time you're going in the lunar calendar. Because if you go any time near when there's going to be a full moon, then there's no possibility that you're going to see the stars that you want to see. In fact, they say that if you go when the moon is out in its fullness, then might as well just be looking at the sky, you know, in a bright city with all the lights there, because you're not going to see anything. So keep that in mind. What does the Imam tell us? He says that on the Day of Judgment, the different days of Eid will present themselves, and the magnificence and splendor of the day of Ghadir with respect to the other days of Eid will be like the magnificence and splendor and brightness of the moon when compared to the stars. Being that it's not something which is even comparable how great and how light-filled the day of Ghadir is. So we are very blessed to be able to experience this, inshallah, This will be a day of increased blessings upon all of us, upon the ummah at large, upon all the believers. And inshallah, it will be a day which is an occasion of happiness to our living imam. And one of the statements that we are taught to greet each other with on this day is Alhamdulillah alladhi ja'alana min al-mutamassikina bi wilayati Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. All praise belongs to Allah who has made us among the mutamassikin, those who are clinging and holding on to the wilaya of Ali ibn Abi Talib. The wilaya, the guardianship, and the mastership of Amir al-Mu'mineen, of Imam Ali and the Imams after him.
Alhamdulillah, الذي جعلنا من المتمسكين بولاية أمير
This Eid, brothers and sisters, is an Eid of wilaya. When we use the word wilaya, all of us are familiar with the term imama. Imama meaning the leadership. But wilaya is a term which is very much related to imama, but it's describing the relationship that the ma'amum, the follower, has with the imam. That relationship is meant to be a relationship of wilaya. Wilaya is something which has different grades, different strengths. Your wilaya can be something which is weak, or it can be a strong type of wilaya. Wilaya is something which in its original form, it means qurb, it means closeness. And when we talk about wilaya, and when Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam and his the imams after him are termed as the waliullah, the awliya of Allah, and they are our mawla, all of that refers to us needing to strengthen our relationship with them, to become closer to them, to accept them as our masters. On this day, you know the beautiful event that took place. Towards the end of the life of the Prophet, he is ordered to complete the message, to provide that guidance which will allow all of his efforts to be preserved and to continue for that tree, which is now, that sapling which is now gaining strength, which is now growing, for it to be able to reach fruition. How is that going to take place? He is commanded that this is the place that you have to convey your message. There are more than 100,000 pilgrims who are returning back from Hajj. Some of them have already gone forward, looking forward to seeing their families, and the Prophet says, they go call them back. In the hot sun, in the middle of the day, the Prophet mounts that mimbar made out of the sandals, the saddles of the camels, and he begins to proclaim that famous sermon of Ghadir, where he says, he asks the Muslims, أَلَسْتُ أَوْلَى بِالْمُؤْمِنِينَ مِنْ أَنفُسِهِمْ Do I not have more priority over the believers than they themselves? And then he says, مَنْ كُنْتُ مَوْلَى فَعَلِيٌ هَذَا مَوْلَى Whoever I am the master of, Ali is his master. And the verse is revealed, الْيَوْمَ أَكْمَلْتُ لَكُمْ دِينَكُمْ I have completed your religion, وَرَضِيتُ لَكُمُ الْإِسْلَامَ دِينَا Islam with wilaya is Islam. Islam with wilaya is the complete Islam. And this is the Islam which is the source of pleasure to Allah.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen شكور ودود قيوم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
اليوم أكملت لكم دينكم وأتممت عليكم نعمتي ورضيت لكم الإسلام دينا.
Today I have perfected for you your religion and completed my favor on you and chosen for you Islam as a religion.
Eid Qadir celebrates the divine appointment of Imam Ali, peace be upon him, the cousin and son-in-law of the Holy Prophet, as Prophet Muhammad's vicegerent and successor. Here at IRIB English Radio, congratulate all our Muslim listeners on the auspicious and joyous occasion of Eid Qadir. A happy Eid Qadir to all our listeners.
زیارت قدیر. In the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate. Salam alaikum. Here is the fourth and last part of the memorable ziyarat of Qadir, or standard form of salutation to the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, which we have been presenting you for the past 3 days. Please stay tuned. My master, it was through you that the truth prevailed, while the people disregarded it, and you expounded the precepts of Islam after they had become obliterated and effaced. Thus you were a forerunner both in waging jihad for the affirmation of the revelation, and yours is the merit of waging jihad for the sake of realizing its meanings. Your enemies are the enemy of Allah, deniers of the Prophet of Allah, who summon to untruth, judge unjustly, usurp power, and invite their confederates to hellfire. And there was Ammar, who, as he fought, cried out between the ranks of the confronting armies, "Come on, let's set out for paradise." When he asked for water, he was given milk to drink, whereat he glorified God and said, "He, the Prophet of Allah, may Allah bless him and his family, had told me, 'Your last drink in the world will be that of curdled milk, and you will be slain by the rebellious party.'" Thereupon, Abul Adiya al-Fazari encountered him and slew him, and may Allah's curse and that of his angels and all his prophets be upon Abul Adiya, and on those who drew their swords against you, and on those against whom you, O Commander of the Faithful, drew your sword from among the polytheists and the hypocrites until the day of retribution, as well as on those who view with approval what offended you and did not decry it, turning away their eyes without disapproving, or provided their support against you through deed or word, or denied you their help, or deserted their duty of waging jihad alongside you, or those who belittled your merits, contested your right, or regarded as your equals such persons over whom Allah had given you a greater right than they had over themselves. May Allah's blessings, His mercy, His bounties, and His greetings and salutations be upon you and the immaculate imams of your descent. Indeed, He is the all-praiseworthy and all-glorious. But what is more amazing and more atrocious after the denial of your right is the wrongful dispossession of the orchard of Fadak from Zahra, the truthful and the pure one, the noblest of the world's women, and the rejection of your testimony and that of your illustrious sons and the progeny of the Mustafa, may Allah's blessings be upon you, while Allah, the Most High, had elevated your rank over the entire Ummah and exalted your station, and He had made manifest your excellence and honored you above all the world's denizens. Keeping away all impurity from you and purifying you with utmost purification. Allah the Almighty and Glorious has said, "Indeed, man has been created covetous. He is anxious when an ill befalls him, and grudging when good comes his way. All are such except the prayerful." Thus Allah the Most High made His Prophet an exception to that, as well as you, O Chief of the Legatees, and excluded all other people. So how misguided were those who wronged you with respect to your right and then, for the sake of deception, assigned you the share of the kinsmen while denying it to its rightful claimants. So when temporal authority came into your hands, you let the situation remain as it was before in regard to your rights and those of the Prophet's family, disregarding them for the sake of your reward with Allah. So your ordeal with respect to these two things was like the ordeal of the prophets, may peace be upon them, in their loneliness and absence of helpers. Your conduct in sleeping on the prophet's bed was like that of Ishmael, peace upon him, when you assented and obeyed, as he did, patiently and seeking God's pleasure, when Abraham said to him, "My son, I see in a dream that I am sacrificing you. See what you think." He said, "Father, do whatever you have been commanded. If Allah wishes, you will find me to be patient." And so were you when the Prophet, may Allah bless him and his family, bade you to sleep in his bed, and in this manner you shielded him from harm by risking your own life. You were quick to comply, having obediently prepared yourself mentally to be killed, whereupon Allah, the Most High, appreciated your obedience and expressed the gracefulness of your action in His words, "May His name be glorified." And among the people is he who sells his soul seeking the pleasure of Allah. Yet again, your ordeal during the Battle of Siffin, when the scriptures were raised on spears as a deceptive stratagem whereupon doubts arose in the minds and the truth was set aside and conjecture was followed, similar to the ordeal of Aaron when he was appointed by Moses to lead his people, whereupon they forsook him while he kept calling them, saying, "O my people, you are only being tested by it. Indeed, your Lord is the All-Beneficent. so follow me and obey my command. They had said, we will keep on clinging to it until Moses returns to us. Such was your case when the scriptures were raised on spear points and you were saying, O my people, you are being misled and deceived by this means. But they disobeyed you and demanded the appointment of arbiters, whereat you declined their demand and deploring their conduct before Allah, and let them alone. So when the truth was revealed and their wrong stand was discredited, and they admitted their mistake and oversight of the goal. But then they fell into disagreement and blamed on you the folly of arbitration, which you had opposed and they had desired and which you had warned them against, while they considered it legitimate, and held you responsible for the sin that they had committed, although you were on the path of insight and guidance and they were in error and blindness. Yet they persisted in their hypocrisy and perversity until Allah made them taste the evil consequences of their conduct. Those who opposed you became wretched and perished, and God slew them with your sword. He revived through your proofs those who were felicitous and they were rightly guided. May Allah's blessings be upon you at every beginning and end of your days and during all your movements and pauses. No eulogizer can encompass your merits and no detractor can obscure your excellences. You are the best of the creatures with regard to worship, the most dedicated in piety, and the most zealous in defending the faith. With your efforts you maintain the laws of Allah, and with your sword subdued the armies of the renegades. With your hands you extinguish the flames of war, and with your discourses removed the veils of doubt, separated the adulterating falsehoods from the pure truth without being deterred by the blame of any blamer in any matter pertaining to Allah. The commendations of Allah the Most High suffices you to do without the praise of any admirer and compliments of any praiser. And Allah the Most High has said, among the faithful are men who fulfill what they have pledged to Allah. Of them are some who have fulfilled their pledge, and of them are some who still wait and they have not changed in the least. Having seen that you had to fight the perfidious, the perverse, and the renegades, and that the prophecy of the Prophet of Allah, may Allah bless him and his household, had come true in what he had told you, and being content that you had fulfilled your pledge to him, you would say, is it not the time yet for this beard of mine to be dyed in the blood of this head of mine? Or when will the most wretched man from among these people rise up? You were convinced that you possessed a manifest proof from your Lord and full insight of your own affair, and that you will meet Allah rejoicing in the bargain you had made with him, and that is the great success. O Allah, let your anathema, accompanied with all your curses, be on those who slew your prophets and the legatees of your prophets, and make them enter the flames of your fire. Let your curse be on those who usurp the rights of your wali, refused to acknowledge his covenant, and opposed him after acknowledging and being certain of his authority on the day when you perfected the religion for them. O Allah, let your curse be on those who killed the commander of the faithful, and those who wronged him, and their followers and supporters. O Allah, bring down your terrible curse on those who wronged Hussein, and those who slew him, as well as those who followed and helped his enemies, those who approved of his murder and those who forsook him. O Allah, let your curse be on the one first to wrong the family of Muhammad, blessings of God upon him, his progeny, those who denied them their rights. O Allah, single out for your curse until the day of resurrection the first one who wronged the family of Muhammad and usurped their rights as well as those who followed his policies. O Allah, bless Muhammad, seal of the prophets, and Ali, chief of the legatees, and his immaculate progeny, and appoint me to be amongst their adherents, among those who obtain victory and security through their wilaya, and who will have no fear, nor will they ever grieve. Dear listeners, what you heard was the fourth and last part of our special program of the past 4 days and a special ziyarah of the blessed day of Qadir for the commander of the faithful Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of the speech delivered on December 17, 2008 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Eid al-Qadir. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. First of all, I would like to congratulate you, dear people, all the faithful people of our country on Eid al-Qadir and the entire world of Islam. Eid al-Qadir is considered to be a major part of Shia's historical identity. Shia men and women have for consecutive years and centuries preserved their identity through the remembrance of this event. I would also like to welcome you, dear brothers and sisters, especially those who have come from faraway cities and the esteemed families of our martyrs. Reflecting on Ghadir is one of the issues that can be of great help to our Islamic society, our people, and our country today. That is because reflecting on Ghadir will help them stay on the right path. There are two or three points that I would like to mention in regards to Ghadir. The event is one of the points that I would like to discuss. The world of Islam, which had grown relatively vast, was witness to a very important event towards the end of the Holy Prophet's life.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Commander of the Faithful was declared to be the successor of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. Ghadir is not simply an event narrated by Shi'as alone. Many Sunni luminaries and hadith scholars, muhaddithin, have also talked about this event. How the event should be interpreted is debated among Muslims. However, all Muslims are confident about the truth of this event. The fact that the Prophet assigned Imam Ali alayhi salam as his successor at the end of his life, about 70 days before his demise, bears testimony to the importance of government, politics, and religious leadership, wilaya, from an Islamic viewpoint. The emphasis that our magnanimous Imam Khomeini and many other prominent religious scholars have placed on the unity between religion and politics is in fact rooted in Islamic teachings, especially the great lesson that Ghadir taught us. This shows the importance of the issue. All the people who interpret Ghadir in this way, that is, all Shi'as, and even many non-Shi'a Muslims who have a similar interpretation, many constantly pay attention to the fact that the issue of government is a critical issue, and that it is a high priority in Islam.
That you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.